is Parshas Baleischa, Perek Tes, Pasek Aleph, page 778. Okay. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe min Bar Sinai, and Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert, Bashana Hashenis, in the second year, let's say, some Eretz Mitzrayim, of the going out from the land of Egypt, b'chedesh harishon leimar, in the first month, saying. Okay, so it's important to pay attention to the timeline here. What Hashem is about to say to Moshe took place in the second year, in the first month,
Nisan,
which is Nisan. The Yasu b'nei Yisrael ha'pasach b'mayadai, the children of Israel shall perform the Karban Pesach in its time. On the 14th of this month, in the afternoon, Tasu Oisim Mayadoi, shall you make it in its set time? Following all its statutes and all its judgments, shall you do it? And Moshe told the Jewish people to make the Karban Pesach. Now, as I pointed out before, Hashem is telling Moshe to tell the Jewish people in the second year on the first month to bring the Karban Pesach. Correct? Now, if you look back in Parshas Bamidbar, which is the first Parsha in Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar begins with Hashem telling Moshe to take a census. When did that take place? If you want to take a look back on page 726. Perek Aleph Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Midbar Sinai Bo Yom Moed. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai Desert in the Mishkan. Be'echod L'Chodesh Hasheni, on the first of the second month, Bashana Hasheni, of the second year of the going out from Mitzrayim. So you've got Parshas Bamidbar starting off with an event that took place in Iyar, and now we have Hashem telling Moshe the Jewish people should bring the Karban Pesach in the first month. It is chronologically out of order.
Well, except if you say second year, maybe this meant first year.
Shana Shenis, it says here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, if you take a look, if you take a look on page 780.
780.
780. And you look at Pasuk Tesvav, the new paragraph by Ravi. Over there, just read the Pasuk. V'yem hakim es ha-mishkan, on the day that the Mishkan was set up. Kisa ha-anan es ha-mishkan lo'el ha-edus. The cloud covered the Mishkan. And in the evening it was on the Mishkan like a appearance of fire until the morning. So it was always the cloud covered it, and a fire at night. And according to when the cloud lifted itself up from upon the Mishkan, and after that the Jewish people would travel. In the place where the cloud would rest, it would come to rest, Sham Yachar B'nai Yisrael, that is where the B'nai Yisrael would encamp. And the next psukim basically talk about how the Jewish people traveled according to the signal given to them to move, by when the cloud, if the cloud rested on the Mishkan, when the cloud would rise up from the Mishkan, the Jewish people knew to get ready to start moving. They would follow the cloud, and when the cloud would come to rest on the Mishkan, that is when the Jewish people knew when to stop. That was, they always followed the direction of the clouds. And the Pasuk says, sometimes they were in one area for a long time, sometimes for a very short time. Whenever Hashem decided for them to move, which was signaled to them by the cloud moving off the Mishkan and traveling ahead, that is what they did. And the Mefarshim say that the reason why the Torah is telling us this is because, you know, the Jewish people were really never knew when they pick themselves up and have to move. It could very be possible that they'd be in one place for one day. They could be in one place for a week. They never knew. It was really a kind of a difficult situation to live under, but they accepted it because whatever Hashem wanted them to travel, that's how they followed. The Sefarno, as we're going to see, points out that even though the Pasuk talks about on the day the Mishkan was erected, how the cloud covered the Mishkan, but we knew that the cloud already was with the Jewish people earlier than that. And that this whole setup about knowing when to travel and not to travel started right away in the desert. So even though the Torah is kind of setting this up again after, it's setting this up, it starts off talking about the day the Mishkan was erected, really what is discussed here happened even earlier. So again, there's a couple of things here that are out of chronological order.
When the cloud was ahead of the Mishkan, they had a move or something?
They were following it. That's how they knew which direction to go to.
When it wasn't on the Mishkan, they knew it had a move.
Right.
When the rest of the Mishkan, they had a stop.
Correct.
Oh. Again, the direction?
Yeah. Now, so the question here is how to understand. Now, we know there is a rule when it comes to learning the Torah. Ein muktam ma'uchar ba'Torah. The Torah does not necessarily work in a chronological order. At the same time, though, when it doesn't, we want to know why. So the Sefarno says like this. And the Sefarno, again, is following a theme that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. And that is the Jewish people were supposed to enter the land of Canaan without having to lift a finger. They were supposed to walk in. The Canaan was supposed to walk out. That's the way it would have been if not for the sin of the Chet HaEgel. And the Sefarno said, again, in Parashas Bamidbar, that the purpose of the census was actually to arrange the Jewish people in a way that they would be ready to enter the land of Israel. So they took a census, they divided them amongst in camps and flags. This was all about arranging the Jewish people in a manner that could enter Israel and take over. So here the Sefarno says like this, Acher shepakad anshei hatzava v'sidr hadagolim v'noisei hamishkan lachnisim la'aretz. After he counted the armies and he arranged the flags and those who would carry the Mishkan to bring them into the land, into Eretz Yisrael, meaning that's Parshas Bamidbar. Parshas Bamidbar is a census, dividing them amongst flags and camps, and then working out who's going to carry what when the Jewish people are traveling of the Mishkan. Okay, v'tir machaneim in atmeim ka'amru v'yam machanecha kadosh. In Parshas Nasei, after the census of the Levim is done, and after we've finished talking about what the Levim will carry, then Hashem says to Moshe that anybody who is Tamei, whether from a dead body, whether being a Zav, they have to go Mechutz L'machana. They can't just be in the regular camps. They have to go out of certain camps, depending on your level of impurity. That's how far, that will determine which camp you're permitted to be in, which camp you're not permitted to be in. There the point was, as the Sforno says, V'tir machaneh min ha-tmeim. It was a purification process. By telling certain Tamei that they have to leave, it was actually purifying the camp, as we find a concept later on in Devarim, that we say, V'ayah machanecha kadesh, your camp. The camp, your army, your camp referring to your camps of armies, have to be holy. And then, what else did Hashem do? He also cleansed the camps, min hamamzerim, v'inyan hasoite, mantia shechina b'neim b'machanet tzevoisam. We know that Parshas Nasei is also the Parsha of Saita. The parsha of, you know, identifying, if need be, a woman who committed adultery without knowing. That's about making sure that there are not, that's the process of cleansing, of purifying the Jewish people of Mamzerim. All that was so that the Shekhinah should rest b'machanet tzevoisam in the camps of their armies. Okay, so says the Sefarno. After the Torah talked about arranging the armies, arranging the flags, arranging who's going to carry the Mishkan as they enter Eretz Yisrael, purify the camps so that the Shekhinah should be able to rest amongst them. After that, Siper HaKasav Arba Masim Tayv Mishasi Yisrael. After that, the Torah talks about four good deeds, four mitzvahs that the Jewish people did. Shebehem Zachu Likanis La'aretz Miad Belti Melchama. That through those actions, through those mitzvahs, they would have the merit to be able to enter the land of Israel without war. Lulei Amaraglim, if not for the spies. Rishayna, what was the first mitzvah that they did? Siper Chanukah Samizbeach. At the end of Parshas Nasei, what does it talk about? The Chanukah Samizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach. All the gifts that the princes brought in honor of the dedication of the Mishkan. So that's deed one. Shane is second. Sri Susam Beinyan Chinuch Halaviyim. What happens in this week's parsha? In this week's parsha, shortly after the discussion ends about dedicating the Mishkan, what does it talk about? It talks, Hashem says, Moshe, separate the Leviim. The Leviim will now be the ones who will assist the Kohanim in the Mishkan. So the next mitzvah is Rizusam, their enthusiasm in training and bringing in the Leviim into the service of the Mishkan. Shlishis, what's the third? The third is what we just read. Zrizusam b'karban ha-Pesach. Again, their enthusiastic approach to performing the Karban Pesach. This is what we just read. And actually, the discussion is not only about the Karban Pesach itself, but about the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. When there were those who came to say, why are we being left out of doing the Karban Pesach? And that's when Hashem gave them the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. Okay? And Revias, what's the fourth? Lechtem achrei hakel yisparach b'midbar. They're following God in the desert. They're traveling in the desert following God. Although, the cloud lifting itself up and signaling to the Jewish people to travel, it took place at times which were unknown, and for unknown periods of time. Sometimes you're in a place for a long time, sometimes you're in a place for a short time. This kind of matter should have made it very difficult for them to be able to travel and camp in the desert. But this is what they did with dedication to Hashem. Okay? Now, so what the Sephardim says is, he's taking everything that we have in all the parashiyas up to this point of time, and he's letting us know what's going on. The first thing that's been going on has been arranging the camp of the Jewish people to be able to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. You take a census, you divide them up amongst flags, you purify them from those who are impure, you purify them from immorality, and that's when now the Shekhinah is ready to rest in their camp. After that's spoken about, we speak about four mitzvahs that were a merit for the Jewish people to be able again to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael without having to fight a war. Those four mitzvahs were Chanukah HaMizbeach, dedication of the Mizbeach, dedicating the Leviim, right? The Karban Pesach and following Hashem in the desert without complaint. Ulohidia kol eila siper oisem kvi madregas hayosim l'ratzim l'funav. And when telling of all this, the Torah told us this in the order, in the level of how much goodwill, how much pleasure they brought Hashem. Not according to the period of time that it took place in. That's why now the first thing that was mentioned were the three things that actually took place in the first month. That was dedication of the Mizbeach, dedication of the Leviim, and the Karban Pesach. And this is although the beginning, the first thing mentioned in Bamidbar took place in the second month. And the whole idea of encamping and traveling based on Hashem's signal, based on Hashem's command, that started from the day they left Egypt. This is an example of when the sages say there is no chronological order in the Torah. When does that happen? When there's a certain purpose that wants to be brought out. And this is when there's a specific reason as to why the Torah wants this order and not the chronological order. And in our case, so this is how the Sephardim was answering the question. It's clear the Torah is not using chronological order. Why isn't it using a chronological order? The answer is because it wants to tell us the following. It wants to point out the fact that the Jewish people were supposed to be entering Eretz Yisrael without having to fight a war. And basically the Torah now tells us the order of that. Even in a chronological order, it's not telling us it, but it's telling us in the order, so to speak, of importance. The first thing that it mentions is the fact that a census was taken to know how many soldiers they have, how to arrange them in camps, how to enter Eretz Yisrael, or how many people they have, rather. To know how many people they have, to arrange them in camps, and to bring them in. That's the first step. The first step the Torah mentions is the census, because that's what the Torah is telling us, that the Jewish people are supposed to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael without a war. Because that's the point. The point is to count them, for them to be arranged and ready to enter Eretz Yisrael. The next thing that the Torah talks about, or the next set of things, is basically creating the type of camp by which the Shekhinah will be able to rest amongst them so they can enter the land of Eretz Yisrael without fighting a war. What is that preparation of the camp? Preparation of the camp is taking out those that are impure, taking out those who are impure from the camp, and making sure there is no sense of immorality amongst the camp, that the Shekhinah should be in their midst. Okay? That's kind of the setup of the camp. That's the setup of the Jewish people to be able to do so. And then the next thing the Torah talks about are the merits, are the mitzvahs that they did that were the merits for them to be able to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael without having to fight a war. And according to what the Sephardim is saying, those merits, the order of the merits, again, are not in chronological order, but they're in order of importance. They're in order of their level of how much they, how pleasing they were to Hashem. The order of these mitzvahs are the order of which mitzvahs were the ones that brought greater pleasure to Hashem.
Does he explain why?
No.
You think so?
No. He just says that's the order. It's an order of importance. It's an order of the one. The order goes by how much, how great their level was in bringing goodwill to Hashem. Which would mean, according to what he's saying, the first thing mentioned was the Chanukah Samizbeach. That was number one. Number
an
two.
Operation of the Mizbeach?
Excuse me?
The Meluyah was it?
No, the dedication, where they brought the gifts.
Dedication.
When they brought the gifts. That was number one.
Dedication.
Right, number one. That was number one. Number two was bringing in the Levium. Number three was the Karban Pesach, and number four was how they traveled without with in total dedication of Hashem. I don't know why that's the order, but that's what he says. You know, that's what he says, and that's how he answers the question. The reason there is no chronological order is because we have a rule. The Torah doesn't have to follow chronological order. The Torah will do so when going at it, when the Torah has a purpose as to why it wants to use a certain order that's not following the chronological order. And in this case, this is a story. The story is all about bringing out how the Jewish people were supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael without fighting a war. So the first thing that the Torah mentions is how Hashem created created the conditions for the Jewish people to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael without fighting a war. They were arranged to do so. The Shekhinah could rest amongst them because of what they were supposed to do. And then there were four mitzvahs that they did that would be a merit. And the order of those mitzvahs are the order of their importance in regard to bringing pleasure to Hashem to be willing to bring them into Eretz Yisrael without fighting a war. So that is how the Sephardim explains the whole order of what's happening between Parshas Bamidbar, Nasei, and Vayishlach to this point of time. It's very interesting. Now, let's take a look on Pasuk Beis.
What page?
This is going to be page 778.
778.
Okay, and this is Parak Tes Pasuk Beis.
778.
V'yasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-pasach b'moyadoi. This was the mitzvah that was given to them. The Jewish people shall make a carbon Pesach b'moyadoi, which means in its set time. Now, what exactly is the word b'moyadoi in its set time coming to teach us? So Rashi says, it's coming to teach us, b'moyadoi, Rashi says, this is again in the right column, three lines from the bottom of the Rashi, b'moyadoi af b'Shabbos. When you have a mitzvah, the Karban Pesach is to be done in its set time. The reason the Torah is saying they should do it in its set time, that word in its set time is coming to teach us, the Karban Pesach is even done on Shabbos. B'moyadoi af b'tumah. B'mayadoi also means even if they would be tamei, they are to do it. If the Jewish people as a whole would be tamei, they should do it. Now, that's what Rashi tells us. Rashi tells us the word b'mayadoi in its set time means to tell us to even do it on Shabbos. Yaakov Kamenetsky points out interestingly that he brings out this idea. He doesn't. I'm not sure if he's saying it exactly in Rashi, but I think he does mean to expand on Rashi when he says this. And he brings out the following point, and that is that this is happening in the month of Nisan. right? Now, on the month of Nisan, we know the Rosh Chodesh Nisan was when was the eighth day of the Miluim, right? When the Mishkan was put up, the Mishkan was erected on the Mishkan was erected. Let me just find this one second. Right, the Mishkan was erected on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That was the eighth day of the Miluim, eighth day of the training of the Kohanim, and the Pasuk says, going back in the book of Vayikra, Vayibra Yom Hashmini, it was on the eighth day, Kara Boish Aaron Levanav, Moshe called to Aaron and his sons and to the elders of Israel. This was meant to be the day by which everything would be completed. So Rashi says, on Vayibra Yom Hashmini, it was the eighth day, Lemiluim, to the training of the Kohanim, Hu Reish Chodesh Nisan. What day was this? What was the date? It was Rosh Chodesh Nissan. The Shahukam Mishkan Boi Bayoyim. The Mishkan was erected on that day. The Natal Eserat Taras. And that day took 10 crowns. That day was unique in 10 ways. And the commentary of the Sivsa Chachamim tells us what are the 10 ways that Rashi is referring to. So Rashi says, so the Sivsa Chachamim says, Ve'eluhain, these are they. Rishon l'masa bereshis. This eighth day was the first day of creation. That means it was the first day of the week. It was Sunday, what we call Sunday. But it's a Rishon. It's first in the sense, the 10 crowns was that it was a first in 10 ways. One way is it's the first day of the days of creation. Okay? Rishon l'masa bereshis, the first of the act of creation. Rishon l'chadashim, the first of the months. Right? Nisan is the first month. Rishon l'Nesiyim. It was the first for the Nesiyim bringing their gifts. Rishon l'Kohun, etc. It goes through all the 10 things that it was Rishon for, it was first. But it's called Rishon l'Maaseh Bereishis. It's called the first of the act of creation. What does it mean, first of the act of creation? It means the first day of the week, of the 7 days of the week, which correspond to the 7 days of creation, right? This eighth day being referred to was the Rishon. It was the first of the week. It was also the first day of the new of the first month. But if we're called, if we're saying Bayom Hashmini, this eighth day was, we know it's took place on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and it also seems to have taken place on when? On a Sunday, on the first day of the week. Okay? All right. So now, if it comes out that Rosh Chodesh Nisan was on a Sunday, okay, then when did Erev Pesach come out? 14 days later is when? Is on a Friday. The 14th is on a Friday. That means Yishech Nekam Pesach on Friday, and everything else is supposed to be done on Shabbos. So Yakovinetsky says that's why it's important to Pasek had to say B'moado, and it's set time on Shabbos, to let us know you can bring a Karban Pesach on Shabbos. It would be possible to think that, now we know that a Karban Tzibur, a communal sacrifice, is brought on Shabbos. But Karban Pesach, maybe you don't look at it as a communal sacrifice. After all, everybody's bringing their own Karban Pesach. Everybody's eating from the Karban Pesach. Maybe you'd look at it as a Karban Yachad, as an individual Karban, a individual person's Karban you can't bring on Shabbos. So you would have thought that you can't bring the Karban Pesach on Shabbos. The Torah tells us you could. But it was very appropriate to do so now at this point because of the fact that now it came out that the Korban Pesach was going to be brought on Shabbos. And therefore, now is the appropriate time for the Torah to say, to tell us the Jewish people should do the Korban Pesach and Moyadoy in its set time, even on Shabbos, because now it was very relevant to tell us you could do it on Shabbos. Now, the Sefornu, when he explains the word B'Moyadoy, which is in, again, here, the Sefornu says like this. The Sefornu says, "V'yas b'nei Yisrael es haPesach, the b'nei Yisrael shall do the Pesach, the Korban Pesach. Milvad ma she'asu b'shmini l'miluim v'chanukas hanesiim, besides for what they did on the eighth day of the miluim, right? Which is again, besides for what they did on the eighth day of the miluim, v'chanukas hanesiim, and the dedication of the Nesiyim, when they brought their gifts, Yasu gam kenes haPesach. They should also do the Korban Pesach. Meaning, in this month already, right, on Rosh Chodesh, It was the eighth day of the Meluim. That's when the Mishkan was erected, and the Shekhinah came to rest on the Mishkan. And then they had, for 12 days, they had the dedication of the Nesiim. So, the Yasub and Esau as HaPasach, and the Jewish people shall do the Karban Pesach. They should, besides for everything else that was done right now, they should do the Karban Pesach. Why would you think not? Sholeyifteru mimenu b'shvel simchas ha-mitzvah shekaimu. You shouldn't think that they were exempt from being of the Karban Pesach because of the rejoicing for the mitzvah that they fulfilled. K'may shekar b'binyan b'yis rishin, which is actually what happened by the first Beis HaMikdash. Shesipur Abreisenu Zal, our sages teach us, Shebitol Shloime Yisim HaKippurim, Shloime HaMelech nullified Yom Kippur that year. B'simchas Chanukah Sabayis, in the rejoicing of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. When Shloime HaMelech built the first, when he finished building the Beis HaMikdash, and he dedicated and he rejoiced in his dedication, they rejoiced for a long time. It went into Yom Kippur, and they suspended Yom Kippur that year. Shlomo Melech suspended Yom Kippur that year for the purpose of rejoicing over, for the rejoicing over the mitzvah of finally building the Beis HaMikdash. That we know is what happened. Okay? Says as Sfornu that Rabbeinu Shlomo is saying that although later on we find that for the joy of the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash, Yom Kippur was suspended, don't think that's what should happen here also regarding the Karban Pesach. The Karban Pesach has to be done, even though you might think they should be exempt b'shvil simchas ha-mitzvah shekaimu, for the rejoicing over the mitzvah that fulfilled of building the Beis HaMikdash, which was why Shlomo HaMelech in his time suspended Yom Kippur that year. That doesn't happen. That's not, says that Hashem is saying to Moshe, that doesn't happen here by the Karban Pesach. Now, I don't know if that means, according to Sefornu, that Sefornu understood that they started rejoicing like they did by Shlomo HaMelech. So Hashem said to Moshe, that's not a reason not to bring the Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach has to be brought. Or, in essence, by Hashem telling Moshe to bring the Karban Pesach, he was actually saying to Moshe that we're not doing the Simcha Shel Mitzvah. We're not doing this kind of rejoicing that would take place later. Time to Shlomo HaMelech, we're not going to do that because we're doing a Karban Pesach. So, you know, let me just say, I don't know if the Sefornu is saying that they actually started rejoicing, and even though there's no mention of that. Does he learn that they started rejoicing, but Hashem says that's not a reason not to have a Karban Pesach? Or actually, by saying that because they shouldn't suspend the Karban Pesach because of the rejoicing of the mitzvah, Hashem was saying, and therefore, we're not going to be doing that kind of rejoicing. But the point of the Sefornu is to say that although they had done all these things before in dedicating and, you know, finally bringing about the Mishkan to fruition, that would not be a reason that Simcha Shel Mitzvah, the Simcha of the Mitzvah, for doing that would not be a reason to suspend the Karban Pesach, as we find later that Shlomo HaMelech suspended Yom Kippur for the rejoicing over the dedication of the first Beis HaMikdash. Now, what the Sefornu could have actually been coming to explain here is the fact that the Pasuk begins, V'yasu, and they should do. Now, Vav usually means it's a connection to something before. What's the connection here? Seemingly, Hashem is coming to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, bring a Karban Pesach. So what's V'yasu, and they shall do? Yasu, they should do. The answer is that the Vav seems to be implying that there's some kind of connection between this and what was before. Says the Sefornu, the connection is the fact that, yeah, you've done all these things before, and you should do this too. Don't think that what's been done before is a reason not to do this. Don't think that the Simcha Shel Mitzvah of building a Mishkan should be a reason to suspend the Karban Pesach, as we find later that the rejoicing over the building of the first Beis HaMikdash was a reason that Shlomo HaMelech suspended Yom Kippur. Okay, let's move on. And let's take a look again at page 778. Let's take a look, Pasuk Zion, four lines from the bottom. And these people said to Moshe, people that were tamei, they were in contact with a dead body, which didn't allow them to bring the Karban Pesach, on Pesach. And they, so they, these people said to Moshe, "Anachnu tameim nefesh adam, we are tameim from our contact with a dead person. Lamani gara, why should we lose out? Levaltihakrim es karban Hashem b'mayadai, not to be able to bring the carbon of Hashem in its time, b'seich b'nei Yisrael amongst the Jewish people." Basically, this is the famous episode of how these people who couldn't perform the carbon Pesach, not because of their own fault, they couldn't bring the carbon Pesach because they were tameim. And they said to Moshe, why should we lose out? We still want to have the chance to bring the carbon Pesach. So Moshe said to them, "Imdu ve'eshma'a, stand here and I will hear my yitzav Hashem lochem, what Hashem will command to you." So Rashi comments on this. If you take a look at the Rashi, which is in the left column, Lomani Gara. So go two lines down in Rashi. Omar lahem, imdu ve'eshma'a. After they make their request, Moshe says to them, "Wait here, and I'll find out." Ketalmid hamuftach l'shmoyim epi rabbi, like a student who is sure that he'll be able to hear what he needs to know from his rebbe. The same way a student by his rebbe can turn to his rebbe and ask a shayla, Moshe Rabbeinu could just turn around and ask a shayla to the Rebbeinu Shalaylam. Ashrei yulid isha shekach muftach. Fortunate is a person who's born from a woman. Fortunate is a human being that is so sure. Whenever Moshe wanted to, he could speak to the Shechina. And the Rambam points out in Hilchos HaSeder HaTorah that this is one of the big differences between Moshe and other prophets. We just read to you what the Rambam says. It actually relates to something else in the parasha, interestingly. Okay. So the Rambam talks about all the conditions a person has to meet in order to be a Navi, to be a prophet, to experience prophecy. He's got a lot of preparation to do. And then this is in Perek Zayin Halach Vav, the Rambam goes through the differences between other prophets and between Moshe. And the one of them that he brings down is, Kol Hanaviim Ein Misnabim Mechalei Sheyirtzu. All prophets cannot just prophesize when they want to. They have to get themselves ready, condition themselves, and when Hashem wants to, He'll bring the prophecy upon them. Moshe Rabbeinu Enakein. Moshe Rabbeinu is not so. Elokozman Sheyachbeitz, whatever he wants, Ruach HaKodesh Leivshasei, the Spirit of Holiness enwraps him, Unavu Hashem Re'olav, prophecy rests upon him, Venitzarech Lechavin Daitai, Ulizdamin Lah, he doesn't need to focus himself and to get ready for it. Moshe Rabbeinu was focused and ready and standing like an angel. Right? An angel is always ready. An angel is constantly in a state of readiness to receive a message, to receive a mission from Hashem. That's Moshe. Moshe is constantly in a state of readiness. Other prophets have to make themselves ready. They have to focus themselves. They have to purify their thoughts. They have to condition their thoughts. They have to condition themselves. And when they get themselves ready, then at some point of time, the prophecy will rest on them. Moshe Rabbeinu is ready for anytime he wants prophecy, he gets it. Why? Because he's always in that state of readiness for prophecy. He is always in a state of readiness like an angel. Lefikach misnabei b'chol eis shenemar. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to prophesize whenever he wanted to at all times. Shenemar, as it says, imdu ve'eshma ma'itzav Hashem lochem. This week's parasha. Wait here, and I will hear what Hashem has to say. And Hashem promised him this. Hashem promised him that he would always be in a state of readiness for, or Hashem promised him this, that he could ask anytime he wants. Shenemar, as it says, Leich emar lohem shibu lochem lo aleichem v'ata poi amoidi madi. After the Torah was given, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem told Moshe to tell everyone, shibu lochem lo aleichem, return to your tents, but you remain here with me. Halamarata, this teaches us, Shkolanaviyim kshanavua mistalekas mayhem, all prophets, once prophecy leaves them, chayzim la'alam, they go back to their tents. What does that refer to? Shutsor chayhaguf, kum ksharaam. Going back to your tent means you go back to all your physical needs like everybody else. Lafikach ain't parshim in the shaseyim, and therefore prophets don't separate themselves from their wives. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go back to his original tent. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go back to his regular physical state. Lefikach pirish mina isha. Lefikach pirish mina isha lo'elam. U'minadaymalei. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu separated himself from his wife and from anything else similar to that. V'nikshara daitoi, and his mind became connected, tied, l'tzur ha'ilamim, to the Rabbeinu Shalaylam. V'lonistalek me'alav ha'hoid la'ilam, and the glory never left him. V'karen arpanav, right, we know that his face shone. V'niskadish k'malachim, became sanctified like an angel. Moshe Rabbeinu's state of being was, it was like an angel. He was constantly in a state of readiness to experience and communicate with Hashem, like an angel. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go back to his physical needs. He didn't go back to his wife, or to anything similar, Rambam says. Does that mean Moshe Rabbeinu didn't eat? I don't know. You know, I know that. It says 40 days, 40 nights didn't eat when he was up in Har Sinai, which would seem like otherwise he did eat. But the Rambam here is saying that he was holy like an angel. And the physical needs that anyone else was to be involved with, he was not to be involved with. And that is the connection to this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu can get an answer whenever he wants. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly in that state of readiness. He's like an angel. He's constantly in that state of readiness to receive or communicate from Hashem. And therefore, if he's always in that state of readiness, he could turn around and ask Rabbeinu Shlomo a question, and he'll get the prophecy. So this idea that we find in Rashi, that Moshe Rabbeinu was like a student who could just turn around to his Rebbe and get an answer, that's directly connected to this idea of why Moshe Rabbeinu separated himself from his wife, which we know at the end of this week's parsha was the cause of why Miriam spoke against him. But it all goes together. Moshe Rabbeinu is in such a state of holiness, such a state of readiness to communicate with Hashem, that kind of state doesn't allow him to get involved back in regular human needs, human endeavors. And that is the state that tells, and because he's in that state, he can turn to Rabbeinu Shlomo anytime he wants and get prophecy and have a communication with Hashem.
So Moshe got, so this is the example here, is sort of a new piece of halacha, right? What this Tomek...
Yeah.
But Moshe was supposed to have gotten halacha from Hashem.
So Rashi here says that he was supposed to get it before,
right.
But basically it was an opportunity for these well-intentioned people to have the opportunity to bring about a mitzvah. Okay. It should have happened before, right. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo gave a chance for these people to have that merit. Okay. Now...
But then he should have known it.
Moshe
should have known the halacha.
No, because Hashem didn't give it to him.
Oh, Hashem didn't.
So that these people who wanted to do the mitzvah, they should have the merit to bring it about. Okay. Now, working with this idea that Moshe could ask from the Rebbeinu Shlomo anything he wanted, or anytime he wanted, so Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky uses this in an explanation of a famous Gemara. There is a Gemara in Temura that says, "B'shashenefta Moshe Rabbeinu al Gan Eden," when Moshe was about to die, Omar Leili Yeshua, he turned to his student, his prized disciple Yeshua, and he said to him, "Sha'al mimeni kol sfeika sheyesh lacha. Ask me any doubts, any questions that you have." Yeah, this is it. This is your last chance. Omar Leili Yeshua said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Rebbe, klum hi nachticha sharachas." Did I ever leave you for a short time? I went somewhere else. Did you not write about me? And his servant Yeshua, the lad, never left the tent. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yeshua, ask me any doubts that you have. And Yeshua says, Rebbe, did I ever leave you? Did I ever go anywhere else and leave you? You yourself wrote about me that I never left the tent. Basically, Yeshua is saying that I don't need to ask any questions. Immediately, Yeshua lost his strength. Immediately, the strength of Yeshua became weak. And he forgot 300 laws. And now he developed 700 doubts, 700 questions. The Jewish people were quite upset with him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lemar lachi efshar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, can't tell you. And they go take them to war, it says. The Gemara says, Hashem said, take them to war. And eventually, the Shofet Asniel ben Knaz, through his wisdom of interpreting and elucidating the Torah, brought back all these halachas and answered all these questions. Which would seem to be that when Yeshua responded, when he responded to Moshe Rabbeinu, his punishment was that he developed questions. He couldn't bring them back like Asniel ben Knaz did through the wisdom of interpreting the Torah. That's what it would seem. And when he turns to Rabbeinu Shalom and says, you know, I forgot these things, I need to know them, Hashem says, no, can't tell you.
But so, what then would have been a correct response?
So now, the thing is like this. That's the obvious question. What should have been the correct response? Yaakov Kamenetsky basically assumes that Yeshua is right.
He knew stuff.
He knew everything. He never left his Rebbe. He constantly learned with him, right? And he learned with him, he studied with him, he had the best teacher around. And everything had been worked out. And he never left his side. He always learned with him, and always learned from him, and discussed with him. And Rabbi Yankov assumes that Yeshua essentially was right. So what did he do wrong? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky gives an answer, and I'm going to share with you the way I would say his answer. He doesn't say this whole thing, all of this that I'm going to say, but basically, his point is that Yeshua went wrong because the Gemara tells us, if the earlier generation are like angels, then we're people. If the previous generation were people, then we're donkeys. You always have to understand that the previous generation is on a whole different level than what you're on. This is where he fell short. Now, and yet, what wrong exactly? Where do we see that in Yeshua? I mean, again, if he knew everything, he knew everything. What should have been if he didn't make this mistake? So this is my understanding, and it goes like this. Yeshua, Moshe Rabbeinu says, do you have any questions? So Yeshua doesn't say, no, I don't. Yeshua basically says, Rebbe, did I ever leave you? You yourself said I never left your side. So why did Yeshua have to answer him like that? Why do you have to answer him like that? And it would seem to me that, without trying to say that he was being arrogant, but rather to say that he was really had a question. But his Rebbe says to him, you have any questions? So he turns to him and he says, but why are you asking me this? You yourself said that I never left. You yourself testified about me that I shouldn't have any questions. So why are you asking me? Again, it wasn't chutzpah. It wasn't being arrogant. It was a question. It's a question to a question, right? That's very Jewish, right? He asked him a question. You have any doubts? And he says, why are you asking me that? Rebbe, why are you asking me that? Based on the way you yourself wrote about me, what you know about me, you should know that I don't have any questions. Why are you asking me that? So this is where Yeshua, this is where we can say that again. Yeshua's point was, you know, he knew everything. He didn't have any questions. He studied everything from Moshe. Whatever Moshe had to impart, he learned from Moshe. And when Moshe says, you have any space, you have any questions, so Yeshua says, why are you asking me that? You yourself should know that I don't have any questions. That's where Yeshua showed that he, for some reason, that Yeshua fell short of this understanding. That you can learn everything that this, your Rebbe, taught you. Whatever your Rebbe has ever taught, you know, and you know it clearly. But Yeshua should have looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and should have said, but I know you're a malach. You're a malach, I'm a person. And therefore, there's something. So when Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, do you have any questions, any doubts? Moshe Rabbeinu was not, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that everything that he ever taught, Yeshua knew. Yeshua studying Yeshua knew. But the point of Moshe Rabbeinu was realizing who you are and who I am, realizing that I'm the earlier generation, you're the later generation. Do you have any questions? Do you want to be able to try to understand something based on my level? Based on my, now again, it doesn't mean that Yeshua should have tried to be a Navi like Moshe. He can't be a Navi like Moshe. Right? But at the same time, Moshe imparts whatever learning he can to the next generation. But again, the next generation is supposed to understand that they're on a different level. And if they are on a different level, then Moshe Rabbeinu could say, do you have any questions? Is there something you'd want to try to understand or know on a level that would be part of the earlier generation level of understanding? It's like Moshe Rabbeinu can impart to Yeshua whatever he thinks he can impart. Yeshua can take it all in. And he can know everything that can be known. But if Yeshua understands that the earlier generation is a malach, that means there's something that the earlier generation has that he doesn't have. And Moshe Rabbeinu was giving him the opportunity, perhaps, to actually delve into a level, into an earlier generation level, that originally he wasn't going to impart to Yeshua because Yeshua was the next generation. And therefore, Hashem then reacted to Yeshua, and he had Yeshua forget. Put Yeshua in a situation where Yeshua has to ask Hashem, and Hashem says to him, you're not like Moshe. Moshe can turn around and ask me. He can ask me. When Moshe has any question, he can ask me. Because he's from that level generation. He's from that level. You're not on that level. You're a later generation level. You can know everything. But you're not on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And you can't just turn around and ask me to answer you. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's level. That was how Hashem was showing Yeshua that he agreed to what Moshe was coming from. That Moshe was trying to say that no matter how much you have studied for me, there is something that you should have been striving to be able to reach the level of the earlier generation, if you understood that the earlier generation is always greater. And Moshe and Hashem showed that to Yeshua by causing him to forget, needing him to ask, and saying, you can't just ask the way Moshe Rabbeinu asked. So it's this principle that Moshe Rabbeinu can turn around and ask whatever he wants that relates to this Gemara, this famous Gemara in Tabura.
Understanding,
Moshe asked Yeshua, Yeshua's reaction was, of course, I mean, I've been here with you all the time. I've spoken to you, I've learned with you, and from the way the Mefarsha